Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Do you want me to sing the jingle?
If you want, if you know it, go for it.
Here is the jingle. Welcome to XYZ.
Nice. Welcome to XYZ, XYZ, whatever you want to call it. This is the podcast for anybody interested in CNC machining, whether you're completely new to it or whether it's something that you do on a regular basis. This is basically a journey of me trying to learn as much as I can from our co-host, Aaron Goff from Goff Custom Knives. And I'm Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. So this is a weekly show which we do on the Makery Network. So every Wednesday there'll be a fresh new episode. How are you, Aaron?
Going good. Feeling energetic this morning, which is good.
That's good. The final push before Christmas.
Yeah, in my case, it's literally the final day.
It's just the last mail-in day.
No, I could probably go further, but like, I'm just calling it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I'm getting very close. Very, very close.
Nice. I did see those luminous green chips that you were throwing this week.
That was fun, man. It's a bit scary to hit the cycle start button on a big CNC mill in the dark.
Amazing. So, for those who haven't seen, Aaron has made a glow-in-the-dark liners for his knives. And, you know, that's nothing new. We've probably all seen glow-in-the-dark liners before. But Aaron noticed that when it's not dark, they're this milky white, off-white green, not the best looking liners to use in the daytime. So you come up with a solution for that.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's quite a solution, but it's a bit different. Just added a couple of types of pigment. So like a translucent dye and a fluorescent green pigment to them. So they have this really bright green color. They came out better than I was hoping, which is good. It's always nice.
So you're pouring a resin into a moldy or?
No, I'm actually like machining the underside of the G10. So I'm making what I'm calling like a swimming pool, a little tiny kind of mold in the G10 itself.
Right.
And then pouring the resin in there, and then it sets, and then that's its final resting place.
I see.
So yeah, that actually has worked out really well. I mean, they're a little fussy to handle when they're still like fully wet because you've got this really shallow pool full of glow-in-the-dark epoxy, but it worked out great.
Wow. Yeah, that video you've done of you actually milling the chips looks very cool.
It was very fun. Cool. I Can you hear that?
That sounded like some sort of monster terrorizing the town or something.
Yeah, that's my cat. He he loves to sing us the song of his people. Hopefully he doesn't keep doing that.
It was
very cool. I thought I'll film it, and I don't know what made me make the transition to like, oh, I should be filming this in the dark, but it worked really cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we may be disturbed by your cat, also may be disturbed by my twins, because I'm currently back in the UK, in Wales. And we're in my sister's house for Christmas. But since arriving here, so it was like a 17-hour journey. We had to have a test before we left. It was quite traumatic, actually. But since arriving here, we woke the next morning to find that the first minister here in Wales has put Wales on a complete and utter lockdown. So we're holed up in my sister's house. Can't really go anywhere. Shops are closed. They're not selling anything. So it's been last minute Amazon for everything, basically. It's been a bit crazy. And at the moment, we couldn't even get back into France if we wanted. They've closed all borders out of the UK. So we are literally stranded here. It's crazy.
How long were you supposed to stay for? It was a couple of weeks, right?
Well, we were meant to be heading back on the 28th because basically about 2 weeks ago, the UK government and the Welsh government said that they were relaxing sort of things over Christmas so people could at least have a Christmas because it's been pretty tough, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And literally two, three days ago, they pulled that rug from under everybody and said, nope, shops are closing today. Which was crazy because they announced this at 5:30 p.m., which is obviously normal time for businesses to close. It's just the timing was just terrible, terrible. It's just very strange. But as I said, we tested before we came in into the country, so we know we're good. And we literally are stuck in the house now, not allowed to leave the house. So it's like being under house arrest. It's quite crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. Hopefully 2021 is going to be a better year. Is this our last show for the year?
But let me think of the dates. There will be one between Christmas and New Year, I think, isn't it?
Gotcha.
Christmas is Friday, so yeah.
I think for that one, my family has a tradition that we do like goals and hopes for the next year. I think we should.
That would be good. Yes. Yes. I've got many, lots and lots. But with regards to work, I haven't done a stitch because I had a couple of knives to finish just before we left for the UK, which I had done. But these are still sitting there. I can see them now. They're actually on the table next to me here.
Right.
They can't go anywhere. The postal service is now finished for Christmas and we're not allowed to leave the house. So, right. Yeah, it's a real, real bummer to the end of the year, but it is what it is. We need to
automation
safe.
Can solve your problem, Craig.
But probably,
yeah,
we could
order a drone from Amazon.
Yeah,
attach the knives to it, and I'll send it off.
Exactly, that would work. Yeah, but roll on next year. Things can only get better, as they say.
Don't say that, man. You'll jinx us.
I know. But we've had a few questions from people on Instagram. So, yeah, last week we set up the Instagram account for the podcast, which is xyz.cnc.
And I've been shitposting, as promised.
Yes, you 3D printed a cat this week, which was nice to see.
Yeah, and 100% of our listeners agree that Die Hard is the best Christmas movie ever made.
Yes, I agree too. Although maybe Home Alone is a very, very close second.
Well,
on a good day, I may say Home Alone.
I'd like to see a realistic Home Alone because he definitely killed those guys, like in the opening scene.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Much shorter movie.
The paint tins and so on the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so we've had some questions from people, so I thought maybe we could get into them today.
Absolutely.
The first is from Nick Johnson, and this was on Instagram. He says, hey guys, first, I love the show so far. Okay, this is a glowing review so far. keep up the good work, and thank you guys for the entertainment. And second is, one discussion that may be worth having is about feed rates and cutting speeds, regards to the material being cut and the tooling material. For example, what kind of feed rate and cutting speed would you use for G10 or a stabilized wood, etc.? And how might those change if you used carbide instead of HSS, hard steel?
High-speed steel, yeah.
High-speed steel, yes, yeah. There are, of course, resources out there to figure this stuff out, but it may be a fun discussion, and I'm curious about your guys' experience.
Sounds like a good one to me.
Yeah, feed rates, tooling, it's all in there.
So I would say, right off the bat, high-speed steel, I don't personally think has much of a place in a CNC machine.
Right.
And so you can use it for... So I use it for drills and some reamers, and that's about it. But my machine, you know, I have a pretty wide spindle, like RPM range, mm-hmm. And I can usually tune it pretty well to the material. But when you're talking about small CNC routers, high-speed steel is actually an even worse choice because you're often going to be running far higher spindle speed than you actually need because you can't go low enough, right? And that's going to put a lot of heat into your cutting tool, and with high-speed steel, it's going to burn it up. You know, it's going to destroy the edge pretty quick. So, yeah, I would say, like, if you can, go with carbide. It's normally not going to be much more expensive. And you will get much better results.
Is there a relationship then between the size of bit or cut-in tool and the spindle speed? Is there a rough sort of, the smaller the bit, the higher the speed, or the lower the speed? Is there a rough relationship there?
Yeah, you got it in the first one. So the smaller the bit, the higher the speed. So, you know, if you're machining with like a 1/16th end mill, like a half millimeter end mill, then your correct spindle speed will be, 10,000 or above probably. Mm-hmm. But it also depends on the material. So different materials have different spindle speed or surface feet limits, like G10 and aluminum basically go as fast as you want. Those materials, there's no real cap. Whereas when you're cutting steel, like there is an upper limit, because at some point you'll be creating so much heat with each cut that you're going to be like melting the material.
Yeah.
So yeah, like as you go smaller, you need higher RPM, which is why, again, for a CNC router, it's perfect to go with carbide, because that means you can go with higher spindle speeds. And then smaller tools, again, means that higher spindle speeds are more correct. So,
and I suppose the more exotic choices there, are they sort of diamond-coated tips, that kind of thing? Is that more expensive? Is it, will they last longer?
It's totally going to depend on your application. So for some things, the fancy diamond-coated or whatever might actually be... might actually be a negative. So when you're cutting wood, for instance, sharpness really, really matters. So that's one of those cases where high-speed steel may be a okay choice, because high-speed steel tools tend to be sharper than carbide tools. But carbide tools will keep their edge a lot longer. So one of the issues is that when you put a coating on a tool, it kind of microscopically rounds over the edge. So if you need like maximum sharpness for machining wood, for instance, then you might be better off going with an uncoated tool versus a coated tool.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Hmm. So for G10, I actually use cutting tools that are intended for steel. So I use 4-flute aluminum titanium nitride coated carbide, and they last quite a long time. But G10's like the most abrasive material on earth, honestly. Like it
as I discovered
tools.
Last week with my G10 step bits. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So like I have another tool that's actually solid diamond. It's not coated. That's a 2-flute ball end mill, and that's a PCD diamond tool. So that's like, normal end mills are like $25 and this thing's like $250 US.
Wow. Yeah.
But that is, I don't know, I've machined probably like 60 pairs of handle scales with that so far out of G10, and it's still like brand new.
Right. Okay. Could you recommend anywhere to get these tools for people? Because I mean, some of this is quite specialist stuff. It's not the kind of stuff you're going to find on Amazon maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty biased. I like Maritool. The owner of Maritool, Frank, has been really supportive of me and my business. Every time I'm like, oh my God, I need a special tool to make this thing work, he sets me up, and it's been, I wouldn't be where I'm at now without his help. So I really appreciate that. And of course I'm going to plug, give him a plug for that. So
of course, yeah.
He's added the diamond tools to his lineup at my request. He's got downcut end mills, which are fantastic if you're like machining materials on a vacuum chuck or something. He's got, 2-flute, 3-flute, 4-flute, all the tools you could need. They're all there.
I was reading a story this week about somebody just had a CNC router, and they were using downcut tools with I think it was MDF that they were just cutting through. And what was happening, it was pushing the not chips, but the dust, I suppose, down.
Yep.
And while still heating up, and they were catching fire actually in the holes that they were sort of routing out. So,
with downcut tools, you need to have somewhere for the chips to go.
Yeah. So if you route it out to pocket, it probably isn't best. But if you're going straight through as like as a hole, then they'll fall through and you're good to go. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, not a good idea for a pocket, especially because they don't actually cut on the bottom, because the flutes are angled down.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So you end up with what's called a negative rake cutting edge on the bottom, which, yeah, you don't want that in wood or something. There is a very fancy type of tool. Oh god, I've gone blank on it. Now I have one at the shop, but it's basically an up cut on the bottom and a down cut on the top.
Oh wow! Okay.
And these are designed for like cabinetry work and so on, where they're cutting like veneered plywood and they need, you know, a clean cut surface on the bottom and the top.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
God, I've forgotten what they're called, but yeah, they're a bit more expensive. Obviously, they don't clear chips quite as well as an upcut, but they do clear chips a bit. And if you're cutting through material and you need good finish on both sides, then they exist. Except it's not very helpful if I can't tell you what they are, what they're called.
I'm sure if you Google upcut and downcut together, there'll be something. Yeah, there'll be some results.
I'm googling it right now. I'm sure I'll find it. Yeah, and then in terms of speeds and feeds, so I'm actually struggling with this a little bit right now, because previously I used a program called GWizard to do all of my feeds and speeds, and I just changed over to a new computer, and for some reason GWizard didn't come with it, like didn't transfer across, and they've stopped making it for Mac.
Oh.
So
is this just like a set of defaults? You put in your tool size and what the material is, and it would give you speeds?
Kind of, yeah. It's actually a... sorry, here, I just found it. They're called compression spiral bits. The ones that cut up and down. Yes, I knew there was something simple. yeah, so it has some defaults, but then you can actually fine-tune everything. You know, so you're, you know, if your spindle can't go lower than a certain speed, you can put that in and it'll adjust the numbers.
Oh, very handy.
Yeah, if you're looking for a rough cut versus a finish cut, you can, like, move a little slider and it will adjust the numbers. Overall, I've found that, you know, something like that provides a very, very good starting point. So yeah, if you're on PC, I do like GWizard personally, and it's very reasonable to buy. I've used that for a long time and it's always gotten me like a very reasonable starting point. You know, from there I might end up fine tuning stuff, but like I've never had it give me cutting parameters that didn't work, which is good.
From a beginner's point of view, if you're just doing wood and maybe plastics, that kind of thing, so easel, which we've talked about in the past, which is, you know, normally the first step for people, I suppose, if they're doing any sort of CNC routing or milling, they have a library of tools and materials, and they'll give you feed rates and cutting speeds, but they are very, very conservative.
Right.
So in my experience, what I have used with them, you can normally notch it up a fair bit extra.
Right.
But yeah, they don't have the facility there to say, you know, what minimum spindle speed would be and to change things. It's very, very basic. But I know a lot of people will use those feed rates and then use it with Carbide Create or with another piece of software.
Right. Yeah, and one thing worth noting is that, like, with a lot of materials, going conservative works fine. You know, so wood has an incredibly wide range of parameters that you can get away with. You know, you don't have to be too fussy. I mean, with natural wood, it's harder because you'd start dealing with grain tear out. But I think that depends more on like your machining strategy than your machining speed.
Yeah.
But yeah, with things like plastic, they can be super, super fussy. If you run too slow, you'll end up welding the chips back into the cut and then your parts just kind of covered in glued on chips. And if you go too fast, you'll end up, you know, packing your chip full of, your tool full of chips and breaking it. So this very defined sweet spot in the middle. It can be kind of hard to get. So, but yeah, for things like G10 and wood, you really don't have to worry too much. Honestly, just, yeah, find some reasonable parameters somewhere and then have at it.
Yeah. Not too much you can damage, I suppose. Well, I think, Nick, I think that answers your question. we have another from the Knife Lab. And it's not really a question. He just mentions that we mentioned the mold polishing stones. And I think that was last week or possibly the week before. Mm-hmm. And Aaron asked myself if I got the right ones, but we never mentioned what the right ones were.
Yeah, so I mean, as I said in that episode, the part of the issue is that it's going to depend on what you're doing. But for me, you know, I'm hand finishing hardened tool steels and hardened stainless steels. Up in the like 62, 63, 64 Rockwell range. Mm-hmm. And I use the CSM stones from moldshoptools.com. And they are a boride abrasives brand. And they are fantastic.
There we go. Yeah. A recommendation.
Yeah, I use those in the quarter by half size. Just for reference.
Cool. Also, I just need to say that if you're hearing shouting and singing in the background, that's just my sister trying to entertain the kids while I'm doing this. I can hear them, so I'm pretty sure the mic is picking it up.
Oh, I can't hear anything.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Not like my cat screaming.
Yeah. And if the audio quality isn't so good today, I apologize, simply because I'm just using the internal mic on the MacBook here, just because we've had issues with getting a chance to get hold of my stuff here in the UK.
Liar. You're recording it on a potato in a bathroom. I know.
Yeah. Well, it might as well as be, I think. Yeah. But, yeah, okay. So, those are the stones that you need. We've also had a question from Kenzie Aaron, who hosts another show, actually, on the Makery Network called The Young Makers. And Kenzie, I think he's only 14. You may be 15 now.
Oh, that explains the lack of salty language in this message.
Possibly. Yeah. Kenzie is Canadian, so he's in Canada like yourself. But yeah, his show, so I say he's 14, but you'd never believe listening to him speak. So his podcast is all about young makers, and he interviews other makers from all around the world. A lot of them are knife makers. And, you know, just about their experience and, you know, what their plans are as a maker. Super cool. And he is so articulate. It's incredible. So, yeah, go check out his podcast. And that's called The Young Makers. And again, that's on the Makery Network. But we asked a week or so ago about novel uses for CNC. What could we use CNC for to improve our lives? And being a 14-year-old, Kenzie says, for wiping your downstairs bits. And he says, I can imagine the little robot hand reaching out from the toilet to give you a hand. I think it'd be like one of those crazy Japanese toilets. Have you seen those Japanese toilets with all the different presets?
Sing a song. And...
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those things that's great if it works great. Not so great if the software update doesn't work properly.
Yes, you don't want to be a beta tester for that kind of thing. No. But talking about those Japanese machines, those Japanese toilets, they can even, to take this down a wrong route, but they can like analyze your waste, if you like it, and see, you know, what vitamins you're lacking in, that kind of thing. It's crazy.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, everyone should have one. Yeah. We also mentioned last week, we talked about using a CNC or like a CNC router kind of machine vertically, so up against a wall and maybe mounted on a wall. And John Phillips, who is a listener, sent us a link actually to a machine that's already out there called the Maker-Made CNC. That looks pretty cool.
I've seen these a couple of times. So it's if you haven't seen it, it's like a machine that hangs off two ropes. And you kind of hang it on a wall or a bit of plywood or something, and then it spools the ropes in and out to position itself in X and Y. They look really cool, but like, I think they'd be fine for like sign making and stuff, maybe like engraving a decorative thing. But...
Yeah. Cutting down sheets, that kind of thing, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know how accurate they're going to be.
Yeah.
But I like the concept. I like the idea.
My CNC hasn't arrived, by the way.
Oh, no.
But I'm pretty sure I'm going to miss it, so it's going to head back, which is good, because that means I can then ask for a refund because the order didn't arrive, and then I can get I think I'm going to go with the Onefinity machines because they look rock solid, and I think they'll do, you know, what I need them to do, and I can make an enclosure for it, that kind of thing, so... So I think that's the plan going forward in the new year, to get myself one of the Onefinity CNC routers.
I'll be looking forward to seeing what you buy after the Onefinity when you have buyer's remorse again.
This, I mean, for what I want to use it for, which is basically cutting G10 scales, I don't think there's anything else out there that would be better than this, in that, certainly in that price range anyway. This is, you know, under $2,000.
That's what you thought when you bought that machine from China, man.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
There'll be a remorse, I'm sure. Six months down the line, at least, yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
What have you seen in the news this week that's excited you? Anything at all?
Yeah, a couple of things. SpaceX had another mission. They launched a secret satellite for the National Reconnaissance Office into orbit. And you know what's exciting about this one? That it wasn't exciting.
Oh, right, okay.
Nothing blew up, you know, like, but they're landing their boosters, you know, like everything comes back and lands on the ground. Mm. It's just amazing that it's you know, not even news anymore. It just happens.
Yeah. How quickly we get used to things.
I know, right?
Lunar Lander. Do you remember the Lunar Lander game?
Oh, yes.
We had to try and land the ship back down.
A lot of landers.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that, yeah.
What else has been happening? So in Singapore, they approved lab-grown meat to go on sale for the first time. I like it.
It seems that it needs to be the future, but it seems that we need to head down that route. I don't know how I feel, whether I'd be willing to eat it at this stage, maybe.
As long as it's not like a horrifying petri dish with, you know, eyes and a mouth, and it's looking at you, you know.
Yeah,
I'll be fine. I'll eat it.
Are you a meat eater anyway? Are you a vegetarian? You are. Okay.
Yeah,
I knew I liked you. Yeah,
I've previously been a vegetarian. Actually, you know, I do think that like industrialized meat farming is like kind of a horror show.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe more than kind of. You know, and I think part of the issue is too that just too many people these days don't know where their meat comes from. You know, they don't think about it. They don't care. You know, I think that leads
everything
to a lot
is cost based.
Yeah,
you go to a supermarket and they're trying to compete on cost, not quality, which is the issue. Yeah.
I saw the funniest thing a while ago. Whenever I think about vegetarian, you know, meat eating kind of subjects, this always comes to mind. There was a lady near me. We were just walking around, and this lady is walking along, and she goes across the street, and there's a, I think it was a squirrel that had been squished by a car, and she saw it, and she screamed. She was like, "Oh my god!" Oh. And to comfort herself, she took a big bite of the hamburger in her hand.
And I was just not like, knowing the hell that these cows live under. Yeah,
yeah. I was just like, "Wow, that's Yeah, I don't know what that is, but it just stuck in my head. I don't know why.
But we've got as you know, we've mentioned before, we've got twins, and Daisy, the one of the twins here, eats like crazy. We'll eat anything put in front of it and so on. But if we're watching like a TV, a cartoon or something, and a chicken comes on, so Molly will make the chicken noise and do the wings, but Daisy will go, "Yum, yum." Oh, Jesus. That's very French, that. Crazy.
Oh, no. And then in actual engineering news, well, CNC news, the chemical company BASF, they make you know, lots of plastic and that kind of stuff. They've been doing some 3D printer filaments, and they just introduced a new metal 3D printer filament that you can print at your house.
Wow, it's sort of standard temperatures then.
Yes, yeah. So I'm just looking it up now to get the price. It, you know, it's basically like a wax binder with metal dust in it. I think there's some plastic in there too, so that it'll print properly. You can print it on any standard printer that has like a 100 degrees Celsius hotbed. And then it comes with a ticket, a golden ticket. And you send your parts away to be debinded and sintered, and then you get back metal parts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I think it's a really interesting concept. I think it's super cool that you can, just on a standard printer, like on your little Prusa Mini, you could print, metal-bearing parts.
So what will they, when you send it away, what will they'll sort of melt away the plastic? Is that right? What was the finishing?
I was looking this up the other day because I was like, can I do this at home? Tell me more. You know. So basically, it sounds like what they do is they use a vapor degreasing system. So they use a solvent, and they put your part above the solvent, and then the solvent is heated so that the vapors kind of land on your part and slowly wash away the binder.
Right.
And then when there's a very small percentage of the binder left, just enough to keep it held together, they take it out, they let the solvent dry, and then they put it in a high temperature oven with an inert atmosphere, so argon or something, and then they heat it up until all of the little metal particles kind of melt a little bit and bind to each other, and then they let it cool and you have your finished pot.
We're living in the future.
Yeah, seriously, right? So it's the material's 316L stainless, and the L stands for low carbon in this case. Okay. And it is $465 for 3 kilos.
Wow, okay. Pretty expensive.
So that's one spool. Yeah, it's not cheap. But I can hear the girls now.
Yeah, I'm trying to mute in between me talking and me not. Oh, so bear fine. With me.
That's fine. But if you don't have a CNC mill and, you know, parts would be too expensive to send out to have them made or something, then, yeah, you know, it's...
possibly an option for people.
Totally. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just super cool that that's out there.
Yeah, and you sent me a link this week as well to the Bandom Tools, to their desktop CNC machine. And that is definitely, you know, a mill as opposed to a router, you know,
yes.
the way it sort of works.
Well, I would still argue it's a router.
Okay.
They call it a mill, but I think the spindle speed kind of puts it in router category.
Oh, okay. Personally. Is that how you'd categorize them?
I think so, yeah. Okay, because, okay. You know, I think the lowest spindle speed on that thing is above 10,000 RPM. I'm just looking at the specs now. But it does machine aluminum pretty competently by the look of it.
And it seems that's what it's designed for sort of aluminum. I'm saying aluminum now. Aluminium is the proper way to say it. Aluminium prototyping. But it's got a very, I assume, to be a very low-powered spindle. Because I think it's a 300-watt spindle.
Yeah, 250.
Wow.
Oh, no, it says, hang on a second. It says 350 for the total power requirements, 250 for the spindle.
Right, okay. So that seems very sort of low power to do, even for aluminium, I would have thought.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. I honestly, I've seen it a bunch of times. You know, I kind of interact with them on Instagram because they have some really cool videos showing off the machine. But I'd never really, watched a video, you know, start to finish showing how the machine runs and so on. And honestly, after watching the video, I'm really, really impressed. It's a really nice package, you know.
Yeah. But it seems to be tuned very well for what it needs to be doing. And it's made by Bandom Tools, which is headed up by Bray Pettis, who used to, who founded MakerBot.
Right.
So, you know, the company that really bought sort of consumer 3D printing. It's the first sort of brand, I suppose, that made it, you know, popular. And I think MakerBot set up Thingiverse originally as well, which is obviously the, you know, the library of print files that anybody can go to and download stuff. And, you know, it's got its own software built for it as well. And it seems to be a really nice package. And there's a probing sensor for, I think, all three axes that it has.
Yeah, that was one of the things that really blew me away. Like, they do, electronic height offsetting for all the tools, and they do probing as part of the standard setup. Just really a nice little package. I'm just trying to look at the pricing here, but yeah, just I was impressed.
I think they're about 3.5-4 grand.
Yeah,
but
3,600.
I think there's about an 8-month wait list at the moment as well.
Oh, wow.
So hopefully they're doing really well as a company, and, you know, they can innovate a bit more as well and carry on. So that would be really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be really cool to see a more heavily built machine with the same software, same features, because it just seems like it's really, you know, very easy for new people to get into.
Yeah, yeah. And if it's anything like the way MakerBot went, they were always sort of improving. And yeah, I think my very first 3D printer was one of the original MakerBots with the with the wooden frame. Mm-hmm. And they were always, you know, making those better and so on. So yeah, that I think it's a really one to look out for, if you like.
And I was just thinking on that realm, you know, are there other little machines like that, you know, that are just really well put together, you know?
I mean, that is, you know, a full machine with an enclosure, whereas in that price bracket, you are looking at, you know, what I'd consider to be sort of routers, and quite often you are literally putting in, you know, a third-party router into it rather than a spindle, a specific spindle. For that sort of price, I don't think there's much else out there.
They've been really clever with their spindle. I don't know if you noticed this from looking at the photos, but the motor that's driving their spindle is actually a brushless DC, like radio control motor.
Really? Right.
Yeah. Or like a variation thereof. It might be one of the ones that's designed for like the electric longboards, the electric skateboards.
Oh, right.
It looks kind of like that. But yeah, you know, I just think that the whole system looks very clever, you know, very well thought out, you know.
Mm. And it seems to be all built in the US as well, which they're very proud of. Mm-hmm. And that sort of links back to what we were talking about last week, where, you know, it's easy to buy machines, not easy to buy machines from China, but there seems to be a lot more choice of machines.
A lot more choice.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that. Trying to keep everything domestic if they can.
Yeah. So with Christmas coming up, we've certainly missed the boat for Christmas presents for people. But let's say you're looking for presents for somebody who is interested in CNC. What are those little things that make things easier for you that are inexpensive, but sort of punch above their weight?
Ooh, electronic tool set, I would say. Like, if you don't have one, they're amazing. So it's just... it's like a little LED with a battery and then a kind of precision metal assembly so that when you touch something conductive between the top and bottom, it lights up.
Right. Okay.
And so they're set to be like a perfect height. I bought one from Shah's, you know, which is kind of the place to buy Chinese tooling in North America. Speaking of buying Chinese machinery. And it was, like $100. And I've been using that for like 6 years. It works great.
I mean, it's not CNC focused, but I think we're going to do something very similar to this on Knife Talk coming up. I mean, little things for, you know, knife makers should have. And those little angle finders, you know, those little electronics cubes.
Yep.
They are incredible, and they are so cheap. I needed to buy a replacement because what one I had was broken, and I ended up buying like five because they were just so cheap and, you know, kind of around different places. Those are the kind of things that I think, yeah, everybody should be getting without doubt.
I don't use them. I know of them. I've never really had a use.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, I use them for, you know, but that's the thing, your machine in virtually, well, everything. You're not taking much to the grinder, I suppose.
No, I just like after final assembly, I'm grinding off the heads of my bolts. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I use it for, you know, any the platen, making sure the platen's square, and that kind of thing. And I did use it to set up that little really dinky little CNC machine I've got as well, just to make sure that the spindle is square with the bed.
Right.
But yeah, they're just really, really handy, those kinds of things. And things like squares, you know, make sure you've got plenty of them around, all those kind of things.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's interesting too, because like when I say I don't have much use for it, unfortunately I couldn't use something like that to make sure that my spindle's square. You know, like you get to a level, like when you're talking about a big CNC mill, you get to a level of precision required that something like that can't do it.
Yeah,
so it's interesting, even though my machines weigh like 5,500 pounds, if they're not leveled properly, the frame will twist and the spindle will be out of square relative to the table. So yeah, you have to get a precision level and put it on the table and go around and adjust the leveling feet until the table is level. And then to verify that the spindle is square relative to the table, there's a bunch of different methods, but the method that I use, I actually put a precision ground test arbor in the spindle. So it's a special metal rod that's designed to have the same taper as my spindle, and then it extends out about 10 inches. And then I actually track a dial indicator up and down on that precision ground surface. And if it's out of square, the dial indicator will change its reading.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But that's to square a machine, you know, to within a couple of tenths over 10 inches.
Yeah.
Not, you know, 0.1 degree or
different degree. Exactly. Yeah. So how did you get your, cause you've got the two machines now, the two big mills. How did you get them into the shop? Have you got like, you know, garage doors, that kind of thing? That
no, they both went in through standard double doors.
Oh.
Yeah. So they're actually the same exact machine mechanically and electrically. It's just that one has an enclosure and one doesn't. And getting them in both posed challenges. So the one with the enclosure, I actually had to take half the enclosure off to get it through the door. But then getting it through the door was super easy. Very, very, very simple. It just fit right in on a forklift. No problem at all. And then you just reassemble it. And honestly, it's not too big of a job to take the enclosure off. It's only about 2 hours.
Yeah.
So not bad at all. The other one fits through the door because it doesn't have the enclosure. It just fits right through the door. But the Z-axis couldn't go low enough. Like, I had to take the cable chain off, and I had to do a whole bunch of stuff to try and get the Z-axis low enough. Sorry, on both machines, you have to take the Z-axis servo off, and you have to bring the spindle all the way down. But the cable chain, so it's like this big kind of plastic chain that has all of the spindle cables, the electrical wires and stuff in it, that still is too high. So you have to undo the mounts for that and kind of squish it. And unfortunately, with the VMC-10, the one without the enclosure, we had to kind of give it a running start. We had to, like, it wouldn't quite go low enough, so I had to just hold it down and then be like, all right, give her, you know, squish it through.
Oh, jeez.
It was fine. It worked
out. Obviously, everything then requires, you know, leveling off and all the rest of it again once it's parked up in its place.
Yeah. So, like, you know, machines had to get reassembled, which isn't a huge deal, just a couple of hours per machine, really. And then, yeah, level them up. And the biggest problem is that on the VMC-10, I don't know what had happened to it, but one of the leveling feet was stuck. It's always been like that ever since I got the machine. I've never managed to unstick it. It was like rusted in place or painted in place or something. So previously I've always just leveled the machine using 3 feet. Like, I've been able to work around it. It's fine. But in my current shop, the floor is so uneven. I needed the fourth foot. So I ended up having to get like a 5 foot long pipe, you know, so like a bit over almost a meter long pipe on the end of a giant Allen key, and just like put my whole weight into it. And when it finally let go, it was like a gunshot.
Yeah. I can imagine if you that much pressure to turn. Yeah. Geez.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but now I've got all 4 feet, which is good.
So what advice are you giving to anybody who, I mean, you just mentioned how you move the two machines.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody's looking to buy an old CNC mill, which you've done, and you've completely refurbished them.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind how you've managed to strip these machines down, clean them all up and fix any parts that you need to, get them all back in, the wiring and everything else to get these machines running again. What resources did you use for that? Or is it just take it apart and we'll try and put them back together again?
Yeah, there's a bit of that. I mean, I've done a lot of taking things apart and putting them back together. Having some practice definitely helps.
Mm.
You know, I think there's very few things that I own or buy that I don't void the warranty on, like, immediately. So, yeah, you know, definitely if you don't have any experience, like, you know, taking stuff apart and putting it back together, then I don't think that you're going to have a particularly good time. It's not going to be any kind of fun, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just have to be really methodical, you know. Like, cell phones are super handy. Take photos of stuff, you know, like whenever I'm going to take some electronics out of a machine or whatever, I'll take a bunch of photos, and that saved my ass a ton of times. Going back afterwards and being like,
having that reference point to go back to,
where was this thing again, you know, like, oh god. you know, keeping things really clean also really helps, and cleaning things when you get them, because, you know, an old machine, if you go through and you really carefully clean it, you know, sometimes you'll find like a bolt that's loose or, you know, whatever. So one of my machines, the guy that had worked on it previously, was just an idiot, I think, you know.
Just an idiot.
You know, so when I went to inspect this machine, one of the servo drives wasn't in the machine. They were like, oh, it's, you know, one of the servos burnt out. We had to take it out. And I do wonder a little bit whether that servo drive was missing out of that machine so that I couldn't properly inspect it, because it had a few more problems than what I was
right,
told to.
Yeah.
So when I started using that machine, I noticed that the Z-axis had a ton of lost motion, like a ton of backlash in it. You know, so you would move down and then you would try to move up, and the machine would think it's moving for about 5/1000ths of an inch and nothing would be
before
happening.
Anything sort of kicks in. Yeah.
And so I took it apart expecting I'd have to replace the thrust bearing or something. So the thrust bearing is the part that secures the ball screw and stops it from moving around. Mm. And it turns out that someone had taken it apart previously and just not done a couple of the bolts back up properly.
No.
You know, so like, that machine was probably out of service because they were like, oh, we replaced the thrust bearing and it's still got backlash. It must be the ball screw. We don't want to, you know, pony up the $1,000 to replace the ball screw. Mm. So we'll just stop running that machine. But it was just a couple of bolts.
Yeah.
Wow. You know? So, yeah, whenever I'm like reassembling something, I'll put it back together and then I'll look at the whole assembly and I'll go around and kind of touch each bolt and be like, I tightened that. This has been done. That's been done. Mm. You have to be pretty methodical, have like a checklist, because otherwise it is kind of easy to, you know, put something back in the wrong order or, you know, forget to put, I've done that before. Everyone does that. You know, you put it back together and then you've got like
you're
a bolt left
a few
over.
Bolts.
And you're like,
exactly.
God damn it. You have to go back and find out where they came from.
Yeah. So have you got like a rigorous maintenance schedule for your machines? Because obviously if the machines are down, you're not making. And you've got the two.
Yeah.
But these are doing different jobs, you said. So one isn't a, you know, if one fails, you don't just jump onto the next because that's doing something else. So what sort of maintenance schedule do you have?
I mean, you should have some sort of maintenance schedule. I'm pretty easygoing about that. Like, I'll just, you know, like one of the machines needs to be greased every X number of hours. You know, I do that. Mm. The other one has an automatic oiling system instead of the grease, and it'll just yell at you when the oil runs out. So you just fill the oil up, you know. Apart from that, you know, there's really not a whole lot to do. That's kind of it.
Just as people say, you just press a button and a knife spits out at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like that.
Just like that. like having the automatic oil system is really nice. It definitely means the machine's going to last longer running production because it's never without oil. Mm. But they when they set the parameters for this automatic oiling system, they were a bit aggressive. It does one shot of oil every 4 minutes. Wow. So that machine drinks about a gallon of oil a month.
Oh,
and
geez.
And then because I took the enclosure apart, I didn't realize how much oil this machine used. And so when I put the enclosure back together, I was like, I don't need to seal it up. You know, normally you would put like caulking along the joints. And I was like, I don't need to worry about that. Yeah, so now this thing just pisses oil onto my floor.
All over the floor.
Yeah. So one of the things for early next year is I'm going to have to go through and degrease the machine really well and then seal up those joints. You know?
Yeah.
Like I can't really put caulking on it while it's oily.
So oily, yeah. Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, don't do that. If you do take an enclosure apart, make sure you seal it back up.
So going back to your space age liners that you made,
The glow in the dark.
These glow in the dark.
Yes.
Are these going to be a constant sort of in stock? Is this something you're always going to be offering, or is this a one off special?
No, I think I've been trying to come up with some glow in the dark stuff for a while. Just it just looks cool, man. You know, like some people definitely think it looks cheesy. It can look cheesy. I think it looks super cool when it's done right. I would like to keep it in stock. Yeah.
Nice.
I've been working on an idea for a long time called Project Blinky.
Project Blinky.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
And the idea was, rather than using, you know, the you know, standard kind of glow in the dark duster or whatever, to actually have like an LED inside the knife that just gently glows.
Well, I've been thinking along the lines of something very similar. And I started it last March because I was going to launch this on April Fool's Day as a new knife that I'd be selling. But for some reason, I just didn't get to it. So basically, I took one of those, you know, the pedometers that measure steps.
Yes.
I mean, we've all got them on our phone and stuff now. But, you know, you can get these, like, tiny little Chinese ones for, like, you know, pennies. They're literally pennies.
Right.
And they've got one of those little, you know, the CR2032 or whatever, those little button batteries in them.
Yep.
So I thought, well, if I cast a handle, just a clear handle, and then milled out some pockets in there,
right,
I could have... because mine knives are sort of full tang, just like yours, and they're sort of skeletonized. So you could get, you could use both sides of the handle to fit something in.
Right.
So the whole idea is you'd have this pedometer in with a little screen telling you how many chops that you've done. And the whole thing was, you know, you could go to your boss and say, well, I've done, you know, 30,000 chops today. I need a rise. And it was a way of measuring your efficiency for a chef. And this was all going to be a joke for April Fool's Day. But yeah, I'm intrigued of that, like putting something in the handle of a knife, electronic, you know. And obviously the problem then is power. Obviously, you know, if it's a battery, it's sealed. Yeah. And you're not being able to get back to it unless you're using screws instead of bolts, and or maybe, you know, inductive charging, maybe that's a way to around it.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was working on this project, and it was just getting more and more complicated. So like, you can buy just little blinking LEDs, but you know, I tried one of those, and you know, you put it in your bedroom or something, and it just drives you nuts because it's this little blinking light, you know. Like, no one wants to be camping and they're like, oh, I know where my knife is because it won't stop blinking at me. You know?
Yes. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, it needs to be like a really subtle glow, like something you would never see in the daylight, something you wouldn't even see in kind of a dimly lit room. It's just when it's pitch black and you can't find your knife. Mm. So I ended up using a little tiny microcontroller to actually like turn the LED on and off, you know, a couple of hundred times a second, so that it looks like it's on all the time, but it's actually not.
It's presuming the battery that little bit,
yeah. And the doing it this way with a microcontroller seems crazy, but it means that I can just have one or two parts. You know, you have the LED and the microcontroller and the battery, and the microcontroller I'm using is really, really tiny, and it's super power efficient. So some playing around with that, and I was able to get a little coin cell battery to last a bit over 3 months.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, how big of a battery can I fit in here, you know? And it turns out that the answer is really not much bigger than a coin cell battery, unfortunately.
Yeah. But, I mean, you could use, instead of using Corby bolts, you could then use, like, hex bolts. You could take it back off because you're not using epoxy. So you could take it off, change the battery if you need every few months.
I really wanted it to be, like, cast in place, you know, so no water could ever get to the electronics. Everything's sealed up, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then I started looking at inductive charging, like we were talking about, and then I started looking at energy harvesting, so, like, the movement of the knife would actually charge it. It's still one of those things, like, I don't think it's ever going to be practical, but, you know, it's kind of a...
No, not practical, but it would be cool, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun, nutty project, so it's still on my back burner, you know.
Yeah, and I can't think who it was, but I know of a maker who puts RFID chips in his handles of his knives. And that gives details of the maker, when it was made, that kind of thing.
I have actually wondered about doing that. I didn't know anybody else was doing it. That's
I can't think who it is. I'll have to find out who it was. I think they sent us a link to something on Knife Talk a long time ago. And I think that's pretty cool.
It's like a little authenticity certificate built into the knife.
Exactly. Yeah. Other things, an Australian maker, I can't think who it was, but he laser etched... the blade to have this pattern on it, and he also had an iOS app to go with that then as well, and it was image recognition, so when it recognized that image on the blade, it then came to life, and it then started animating, that kind of thing. That was really cool, but again, it's not practical in any way, but it's just something quite
bit
cool
of fun. Yeah, interesting.
So that's April Fool's now. That's been I've blown the gag.
Yeah, seriously. I have to think of what I'm going to do for this April Fool's. A couple of years ago, I did a review on a chocolate toolkit.
Yes, I remember that. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that was delicious.
The thing is, I think people are expecting stuff on April Fool's now. If you see anything that looks half dodgy, you're like, well, that's not real. I think it's the perfect opportunity for a real company to introduce something just wacky and crazy, but that is real.
There are companies that have done that. I forget. I'm trying to think of what the example was. But there are companies that have done that where they introduced something that sounded, oh, you know, that's so futuristic. There's no way it's real. And then they were like, no, joke's on you. It's real.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think, didn't the Segway do that years and years and years ago? I'm feeling that was on an April Fool.
Oh, man, days. the Segways. Oh, they're so...
That was marketed as the ultimate in personal transportation before people knew what it was. And we thought, what the hell is this? This is going to be amazing. And it was like, oh, it looks a bit shit.
I like them, but yeah, I couldn't see myself riding around on one, you know?
Yeah. And keeping any sort of credibility. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Well, but I think we've gone far enough into Crazy Town today.
I think so. So are you ready for Christmas? Have you got everything sorted, ready to go for the big day?
No.
What are your plans? Have you got much going on?
No, not at all. I mean, we're in a social bubble with my girlfriend's mum, so we're going to have Christmas with her. She lives by herself, so everything's kosher there. So, yeah, it's just going to be very, very chill. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, like, talk to my... it's funny, like, you know, I think the whole social distancing thing and being online is very new for a lot of people, but my parents still live in Australia, so we've done, you know, online Christmases for the last 14 years or whatever, however long I've been living in Canada. So.
Yeah, so you're used to that as well. Yeah.
Business as usual there.
Yeah, but, you know, hopefully you can take, you know, a few days off and you can relax and refreshed, ready for, you know, a new year and new challenges and new products as well, which we can talk about next week with regards to you know, plans for the year and what our hopes and goals are, maybe.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be exciting. Like, things are going to change a lot for me next year, which is fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah. Right, well, I think that's a show. We shall let everybody get back to their turkey and pulling crackers and all those kinds of things. Everybody have a great Christmas.
Yeah, happy Christmas, guys. See you next week.
If you like this show, take a look at our other shows made for makers just like you at www.makery.network.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.